I invite you to take your Bible and turn with me to 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel, and we're going to look at chapter 8, beginning of verse 10, and several other passages in 1 Samuel. I had a first last night. I told Elaine I need to go back to my study and look over my sermon a little bit. I have to take a little bit of medication just to get off to sleep at night, so I took that and went into my study, and I called one of our church members that I knew was ill and talked to him for about 10 minutes. And I started studying my sermon, and the next thing I knew, Delaine walked in, and she said, "Honey, you're asleep. Are you coming to bed with me?" So I went and got my sermon this morning. I went to sleep last night on page 6 of my sermon. So I'll be watching you today as we go through the message. I'll let you know when we're on page 6 to see if you're due for your nap, okay? So I've never fallen asleep on my own sermon before, but anything is possible. Look with me at 1 Samuel chapter 8, and you start with verse 10. Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking him for a king. He said, "This is what the king who will reign over you will claim as his rights. He will take your sons and make them serve with his chariots and horses, and they will run in front of his chariots. Some he will assign to be commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties, and others to plow his ground and reap his harvest, and still others to make weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will also take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his attendants. He will take a tenth of your grain and of your vintage and give it to his officials and attendants. Your male and female servants and the best of your cattle and donkeys he will take for his own use. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his slaves. And when that day comes, you'll cry out for relief from the king you have chosen. But the Lord will not answer you in that day." Back in the mid-1990s, there was a man named Robert Reich who was Secretary of Labor for the United States. He decided to travel across our nation and interview employees and companies from coast to coast. And here's what he found out. As he would talk to employees of corporations, he was looking for how they would use certain pronouns. He said, "When I would meet with some employees, they would talk about the company in terms of them and they." And he said, "When I was talking with employees that worked for corporation and asked them about safety and productivity, and the employees said them or they, he said, I knew there was tremendous disunity and disharmony between management and the employees." He said, "When I went to companies and asked questions like, how is safety here? How is productivity? And those employees would say, we seek to have a very safe work environment, or we are a team here and we are highly productive. He says, I know that they are unified and going to be a successful corporation. Churches could do well to take heed to his findings. I want you to know, when people walk into a worship center as first-time guests, within the first 10 minutes, they can sense whether there's unity and harmony. When somebody asks you about your church, Pleasant Valley South Baptist Church, do you say, well, they are going to Ukraine, or they are doing missions in Peru, or they are having a block party downtown Rome, or do you say, we're involved in missions, and we're involved in reaching people for Christ in our community? I came across this text in just some of my personal Bible reading one day. And when I saw that, I thought, here is an extreme problem that we face in the workplace, in school, in churches, in families, and in social relationships. You find in 1 Samuel chapter 8, the people, the children of Israel, began to groan and complain again. They said, we think we want to have a king to rule us. And they griped and complained so long. God told the spiritual leader among the children of Israel, Samuel, to go out and anoint a king. Now notice what I read to you just a few moments ago. We see the taxation that's going to take place if they have a king. We see that many of them will become enslaved by the king and the government. And the king will take your daughters and your sons to serve in certain places. And the king will also take a portion of your estate. We call that taxes. Down at the bottom of the passage I read for you, we find the people will rue the day. They will gripe and complain about the day they ever asked God to give them a king. 1 Samuel chapter 9, verse 17. God led Samuel to anoint Saul as their king. And I want you to notice, if you read about his life, he was a good king. He did things that were right in the face of the Lord for a little while. And then I want you to know, when he began to disobey God, God took his hand off of Saul. Go to 1 Samuel chapter 16. Samuel is sent by God to ordain David as the king. So David enlists also in Saul's service. And you recall the story in 1 Samuel 17. David kills Goliath. And after David killed this giant, 1 Samuel 17:57. Listen to what happened. As soon as David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul, with David still holding the Philistine's head. "Whose son are you, young man?" Saul asked him. David said, "I am the son of your servant Jesse of Bethlehem." This is kind of a gruesome scene. We see that David's killed Goliath. And you remember what happened? David took a sword and cut off the head of Goliath. So undoubtedly, David is carrying the head of Goliath around in his hand with the blood dripping out. So everybody would know the Philistine has been killed. So Abner takes him to Saul, the king, and he's still holding the head of the giant in his hand. Now listen, get that picture, because this is where the javelin of jealousy penetrates the heart of Saul. Jealousy is a poison that will rob you of the blessings that God has given to you. Do you realize it was jealousy that crucified Jesus on the cross? You say, "Well, no, I don't believe that. It was our sins." Yes, it was. But I want you to look at Matthew. You can just write it down if you want to. Matthew chapter 27, verse 18. And the writer wrote this. He said that Pilate had Jesus delivered over to be crucified, for he knew that they had handed him over because of envy or jealousy. The Jews, the religious leaders of the day, were jealous of the crowds that were coming to Jesus. They were jealous of his teaching, the charisma that he had with people, of his ability to work miracles. So because of envy, because of jealousy, they had Jesus crucified. Jealousy kills. Jealousy kills work relationships. Jealousy kills families. Jealousy kills marriages. It kills relationships at schools and relationship at work. Somebody just calls that the curse of jealousy. First of all, I want us to note here the symptoms of jealousy. Proverbs 27:4. Anger is cruel and fury overwhelming, but who can stand before jealousy? Listen to what Eugene Peterson wrote in The Message. We're blasted by anger, swamped by rage, but who can survive jealousy? Jealousy is a problem that every single one of us, if we're honest with ourselves and God, we fight. Jealousy is like a plague. Somebody said jealousy is when you have all you ought to have and you still want what somebody else has. Envy is simply wanting what somebody else has. So we'd say jealousy and envy, or at least kissing cousins. It's so easy to be jealous in an instant. For example, your classmate makes the varsity football team and you don't. Your friend makes competition cheerleading team and you don't. Your neighbor buys a bigger home, but you can't afford one. Your neighbor buys a classy sports car that you really want, but you can't afford it. It could even happen to a pastor who hears a better preacher or visits a bigger church. One of the big problems among pastors, two things, ego and also jealousy. Isn't that sad? I read somewhere the other day that said that some pastors, their ego is so big that actually the structure of the stage is not strong enough to hold them up when they preach on Sundays. And you know what? That's the truth. But then there's a lot of jealousy between pastors. So the first symptom I want you to see there as we move on into this is anger. 1 Samuel 18, verse 8 through 11. Saul, look at this. There's David with the giant's head. He's slain the giant. What's the first thing Saul feels? 1 Samuel 18:8. Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. They have credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom? And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. And the next day, an evil spirit from God came forcefully on Saul. He was prophesying in his house. While David was playing the lyre, as he usually did, Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it, saying to himself, "I'll pin David to the wall," but David eluded him twice. Saul had a reputation as a king. He was a man that was known for his outrage and his anger. You can only suppress bitterness so long. In fact, you can't keep it hidden very long. This is because attitudes like bitterness and jealousy are written in the eyes of every one of us. Proverbs 25:23 says this, "The north wind brings forth the rain, and a backbiting tongue, an angry countenance." If you're resentful of somebody, it's on your face. You can't hide it. But we're on page 6 now. How are you doing? You know, oftentimes there's fights and fusses between people in different denominations. I was reading the other day where this small town only had one Methodist church and one Baptist church. And they were always in competition with each other. Well, I want you to know that the Baptist preacher went on vacation. And while he was out of town, one of his members died. Well, that family from the Baptist church, rather than calling the Baptist minister back from his vacation, asked the Methodist preacher in the town if he would conduct the funeral. The Methodist preacher said, "I have to check with my boss, the bishop." So the Methodist preacher called the Methodist bishop and said, "I've been asked to do a funeral for a Baptist because the Baptist preacher's out of town." And the bishop said, "You have my permission. Bury every Baptist you can." So the Methodist preacher did the funeral. The first sign I want you to see here of jealousy is when you got anger in your heart. The second thing I want you to write down is a critical spirit. 1 Samuel 18, verse 8. "They have credited David with tens of thousands," he thought, "but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom?" Now listen to me. Jealousy breeds sin and cynicism. People who become jealous at the mention of another's success or something a friend has received are usually very, very negative. They look for ways to undermine the efforts of other people. Third thing I want you to write down is this. They have a sense of insecurity. 1 Samuel 18, verse 9. "And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David." Now, I want you to watch this. Jealousy changes our focus. Jealousy causes us to get our focus off Christ, the focus off of God's mission and His will for us, and we've got our eyes on the person for whom we're jealous. You see what it says? From this time on, Saul kept an eye on David. So I want you to see here, the fourth thing is the wrong focus. It moves right into that. Focus is a key element for the Christian life. You know, every year, Delaine tries to walk. She tries to watch on television the dog show. You know what I'm talking about? The annual dog show. I don't know the name of it. Don Davis would know. It's in his will. He's going to leave money to that foundation. But it must go on for about 5 nights. You got the shortest dog, the longest dog, the biggest hound dog. And, you know, some kind of breed, some kind of crossbreed. And, you know, they come out there and walk them across the stage. You've seen that. And then the thing that I don't understand, I wouldn't want to be a judge, because they hold their lips back and look at their teeth. And then they go to the other end, too, and check things out. I'm just not there. You understand? And, you know, these people pay $50,000 for these dogs. But I want you to notice something. Before those dogs ever do anything, before they perform, that trainer will do this, and the dog always looks up. And then that dog won't do anything until what? There's a command given, and then they'll walk, or they'll stand, or whatever. And what do they do every time the dog obeys? They pop an M&M in that dog's mouth. They always give that dog a treat. I want you to know that, listen, the dog focuses only on one thing, either on looking up for a command, and then after the command, only on the command. Whatever, listen to me carefully, whatever has your focus has you. Have you ever thought about that? Sports, they're wonderful. But if sports has your focus, sports has you. I know some guys, that's all they talk about is sports. And as I sit there and listen, I'm thinking, don't you know anything else? But I don't say that. I just, yes, and every now and then I'll throw in a statistic. I know what sports are too. Anything that has your focus has you. So ask yourself, are your eyes of your heart set on Jesus, or am I angry and jealous of other people? Number five, if we have jealousy, we have a broken fellowship with God. 1 Samuel 18:12-16, and then verse 28. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with David, but had departed from Saul. So he sent David away from him and gave him command over 1,000 men. And David led the troops in their campaign. In everything he did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. When Saul saw how successful he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he led them in their campaigns. Verse 28. When Saul realized that the Lord was with David and that his daughter, Michal, loved David. You can read your Bible, you can pray all you want, but if you're allowing jealousy that's involved between you and somebody else to prevail in your life, you're not going to hear from God. You've allowed a wall to be built between you and your daily walk with God. It's a self-centered emotion. Instead of having a grateful heart for what God's given you, you spend time thinking about what other people have accomplished and what other people have. In some cases, a jealous person can't even pray with true devotion because they only want to ask God to deal with that other person. Satan's goal, listen carefully, is to bring destruction into your life. He wants to distract you and prevent you from serving God with all your heart, your mind, and soul. Now, the sixth thing I want you to write down is this, is physical sickness. Jealousy causes stress on your body. And if there were a physician, if there's physicians in the house today, and there are, they would tell you this, that when you allow stress to prevail over time, it will attack the weakest part of your body. So if you have some kind of little pre-existing illness, that may exaggerate it. It may aggravated. So I want you to know that the happier you are and the more filled with joy, and if you don't have jealousy in your life, you'll be a healthier person. Now let's look at the serious nature of jealousy here. Saul was so infected with jealousy, he plots to kill David. Shakespeare spoke of jealousy, and here's what he said. It is a poison more deadly than a mad dog's tooth. Proverbs 14:30. A sound heart is life to the body, but envy is rottenness to the bones. Envy and jealousy rots us from the inside out. You know, many times criticism is an outward manifestation of an inward problem of jealousy. Now let me show you where sometimes we get jealous. For example, maybe you're in a school system. Somebody gets promoted. You have the same credentials and you think you should have gotten the promotion. I mean, you interviewed for the job and you didn't get it. The other person got it. And you know what you said? They just knew somebody on the board. They had the inside track. They may have. But you say, that person is less qualified than I am. I have more experience. I'm more dedicated. I have a calling from God to take care of those kids. And that person doesn't. And you think of all kinds of reasons why you didn't get the promotion, and all the time you're just jealous of that other guy or that other lady. It's the same way in sports. I should have gotten most valuable player. I remember I did this. I just know that their parents give more to the coach and the sports program than my parents do. That's the only reason they got most valuable player. Well, he's got a big church over there. I know what it is. He's politically connected in our convention, shook enough hands, kissed enough babies, did enough favors for the higher-ups that finally he was allowed to have a large church. Folks, that is nothing in the world but jealousy. The real problem with jealousy is it robs us of the peace that we ought to have in our hearts. When you look at David's response, he had opportunities, when you read through 1 Samuel, he had opportunities to kill Saul, who was trying to attack him, but he didn't do it. Now let's look at the solutions to jealousy. First thing you need to do, number one, you just need to confess it. I need to confess it. Now what is confession? Confession is simply agreeing with God about what He already knows in your life that is sinful. The second thing you need to do is this. You need to confirm it. You say, well, what's the difference in that and confessing it? Well, when you confess it, then you talk to God and tell God that you know in your heart that envy is sinful. You're not just saying, I've got this sin in my life. You realize the ramifications of it. If there's a chance you're jealous of another person, ask God to help find a way to encourage or to compliment or befriend that person with whom you're jealous. You know, in the academic world, especially on the college level, there's academic pride. It's thick. You can have somebody right here who's got their PhD from Harvard. You can have somebody over here that's got their PhD from a little community college. And I'll guarantee you, there'll be arrogance on the part of the person with a degree from Harvard over the person over here from the small community college, because this guy paid more for his education than this one. If you've ever been in a college classroom, you know what I'm talking about. If you've ever had to address a group of professors, and I'm not saying that that's the only profession where it is, in the medical profession. You know, I admire doctors who are brilliant. I want the smartest doctor in the whole wide world working on me. But I love a doctor who is also humble. He realizes that, or she realizes that God gave me this intelligence. It was for me to develop. It was for me to study. But guess what? God gives that doctor breath just like He gives me breath. He gives my heart the ability to beat just like His. And I've watched it through the years. We make hospital rounds here as pastors and staff members. And I know when doctors are making their rounds, they don't need to get caught up. But I can walk through the halls and point out doctors to you, and I can tell you who's even going to nod their head and speak to you when you're walking down the hall. I've told Elaine there's certain doctors in town I don't want working on me. I don't say anything to our church members, but I see how they treat our church members. No bedside manner. Just come in, they're cold, calculated. You got cancer, you'll be dead in 6 months. Or you got the doctor that comes in and said, look, I've been praying for wisdom on how to treat your case. We're going to try to keep you comfortable. We've done what we can do, but if you want more treatments, we'll do that. I'll work with you. And I'll make sure you get the best of care. Anybody can be nice. It's in the banking profession. It's in any profession that you can name. It's in the music profession. You can have all kind of conflicts if you're not careful between a pastor and a minister of music. The pastor will say, what in the world were you singing Sunday? And then the minister of music can say, you don't know anything about music, pastor. And so you got to be careful with pride and ego and make sure you work together. Third thing I want you to write down is commend the Lord. You say, well, what in the world am I commending the Lord for if I'm eating up with jealousy? Commend the Lord for convicting your heart that jealousy is sin. Commend the Lord for that which He's given you and entrusted you with here on this earth. Next thing you want to write down this is consult. We need to pray and ask God for help so that we may see the heart of the other person of which we're jealous. Folks, I don't care if it's in the corporate world, government, politics, your office, your neighborhood, your classmates. We don't have any excuse to be jealous of anybody on the face of this earth. You got to remember who you are in Christ. You're forgiven, blood-bought child of God. You got to remember what you have. The people that live in poverty in our nation, if you go to some of these third world nations, that's country club living compared to what third world nations is just normal, natural right for them. They live with absolutely nothing. We're blessed more than anybody on the face of the entire earth. Now listen, not only do you need to confess, confirm, commend, and consult, the next thing you need to do is walk close to God. Walk so close to God that you're willing to wait for Him to work. The times of waiting offer some great opportunities for us to grow closer to God. And as we wait, we can listen for the voice of instruction. The other thing I want you to write down is contentment. Philippians 4:11. Not that I speak in regard of need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. Believe you are where God wants you to be. Now, I know a lot of people don't like Rick Warren. I was a classmate of Rick Warren. He founded Saddleback Community Church. Like him or don't like him, the day he walked off campus at Southwestern, we thought this was the craziest man we'd ever met in our life. He said, God has led me to go out to Saddleback in California and start a church. We thought, yeah, sure. He went out there. The rest is history. He's written Purpose Driven Life, Purpose Driven Church, all kind of purpose books. And for the last 15 to 20 years, he quit drawing a salary from his church. He lives off his book royalties. He doesn't believe in tithing. He believes in giving above the tithe. And he now gives 90% of his income to work through the ministries of his church. He and his wife only live on 10%. They haven't bought a mansion. They live in the same house they've been living in for 20 years. Driving the same car they've been using for years and years and years. And a lot of people have been critical and jealous of him. And you know, I look at him, and I was a student sitting beside him in class, and I'm in Silver Creek. Am I jealous of him? Absolutely not. I'm right where I'm supposed to be. And the other thing, I don't have an opportunity to damage as many people as he does with his teaching and preaching. So I'm not going to be held as accountable as he is. But I want to say this, his books, especially Purpose Driven Church, was not written to plug in those principles to every church in the country. What he was actually doing is saying, this is what God led me to do here. And then a lot of pastors looked at that and said, we'll just plug that in our churches. And the next thing on, the church split, died, and the pastor had to go find somewhere else to go. He was just journaling what God had done in his life. Am I jealous of him? Absolutely not. I went to school with Mike Huckabee. Y'all know the Huckabee show? The man that's tried to run for president twice. What did he get that I didn't? He even had a television show for a while. I missed that show. Did some great interviews. Am I jealous of Mike Huckabee? Absolutely not. We've had David Allen here, who's raised in West Rome Baptist Church. Best expository preacher I know on the face of the earth. We had classes together at Southwestern. He is now Dean of the School of Theology. He's written several books. He's got more coming out. Am I jealous of him? Absolutely not. Is he smarter? Yes. Does he have a wider scope of ministry? Yes. Am I jealous of him? Nope. God made me, and put me where I'm supposed to be, in Silver Creek, Georgia, down from a junkyard, and we've been upgraded to a horse pasture across the street from the cows. Be content, not complacent, but be content with who you are and what God has given you. Somebody wrote this: it is a good test to the rise and fall of egotism to notice how you listen to the praises of other men or women of your own standing. How do you respond if you're a teacher, administration, corporate, politics, government work, a student? How do you respond when somebody tells you about somebody else who is more gifted and more accomplished than you are? How do you respond? Do you say something negative about them? Or do you say, they've allowed God to use them in an outstanding way to impact lives? You know, several years ago, a family visited our church, and I went to see them. They chose not to join Pleasant Valley South. You just want the people that God leads to your church to be a part of your church. Listen to me carefully. I saw those people about a year later. And they said, you know, we loved your church, but said we decided that just was not where God wanted us at this time. And we went to a nearby church. And I said, you know what? I said, I know you, Pastor. And I said two or three good things about him, and I didn't have to make it up. Do you know what I'm talking about? It wasn't ministerially speaking. 6 months later, I saw their pastor, and the first thing he did when he walked up, he said, thank you for the compliments you paid me to my new church members. What you say is going to come back. And it might as well be something positive. What if I'd said something negative about that guy? It would have been 6 months before I'd have seen him. He would have called me and told me what his new members were going to say. Don't be jealous of other people. The antidote to jealousy is contentment. Be satisfied with what you have, who you are, and where you are. Galatians 5:19 through 21 says, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. Just a few years after I came to Pleasant Valley South, we all heard the news story that came out of Channelview, Texas, Channel View, Texas is just a nice upper middle class community outside of Houston. And here's what we heard about. We heard about a girl named Amber Heath, and then there was another girl named Shana Holloway. They grew up down the street from each other. They played together, went to school together. In fact, they both went to a Christian academy. Moms carpooled. They took each other's kids back and forth. I want you to know that Shana's mom was active in a local church and also the church organist. Oh, they just all got along so great. But let me tell you where the first problem showed up. It was the sixth grade. Cheerleading tryouts. Oh, goodness. Some mamas are going to get involved in that. Amber made the cheerleading squad in the sixth grade. Shana didn't. Shana's mom took offense. Now, I want you to know that this rivalry started right here. But I want you to know as things went on, there were some little beauty contests. Well, I want you to know that Amber had been in beauty contests since she was in like four years old. I don't know why you do that, but 4 years old. So every time they had a beauty contest or something at school, Amber seemed to be just a little bit better than Shana, and Amber always beat Shana out. I want you to know what happened when they got to middle school. Cheerleading tryouts, and then they let the student body vote on who's going to be on the varsity or the middle school cheering squad. Shana's mother showed up at school and handed out pencils that had engraved on it Shana for cheerleader and gave it to the students and handed out rulers. Now, most students wouldn't know what that is. Now, handed out rulers that said Shana for cheerleader. And Shana was disqualified from the election and didn't make cheerleader. Well, finally, Shana's mother couldn't take it any longer by the time they got to high school. Shana's mom went out to hire a hitman to kill Amber and her mother. Shana's mom's ex-brother-in-law heard about this and reported it to police. Police got involved and got a plainclothes guy posing as a hitman and met with Shana's mother. And Shana's mother said, "I'm going to give you $5,000 to kill Amber's mother. And I'm going to give you $2,500 to kill her daughter, Amber." Finally, she said, "I don't have the money for you to kill both of them right now. So I've got some diamond earrings I want to give you as a deposit on killing Shana's mother, Amber's mother." Now, can you believe that? That's a true story. How sick is that? And I want you to know that Shana's mother was arrested, tried, and convicted. Solicitation of murder of two people. Sentenced to 15 years. Now listen to this. She hired some lawyers to appeal, and the lady got off on a technicality and only served 6 months of her sentence. Now what caused all this? The javelin of jealousy. Shakespeare called jealousy the green-eyed monster. John Dryden called jealousy the jaundice of the soul. The writer of Proverbs said in Proverbs 27:4, "Wrath is cruel and anger a torrent, but who is able to stand before jealousy?" There's nothing in the world that'll overcome jealousy better than being satisfied, I want to say it again, with who you are. If you're saved, you're a blood-bought child of God. You've been adopted into the family of God. You're the child of a king, so act like it. Be satisfied with who you are. Be satisfied, I didn't say complacent, be satisfied with what you have. And be thankful that God has blessed each one of us more than we ever deserve on the face of this earth. So I just leave you with a question. Today, are you carrying the javelin of jealousy for anybody that's around you? You stand right where you are, heads are bowed, eyes are closed.